Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Visa. Whether you're a super fan or a food truck owner, Visa wants to help you pursue your passion by providing you with the most secure and easy payment experience possible. That's why they're continuing to make innovations, from tapping to pay to push payments, so you can get to where you would like to be. Visa, everywhere you want to be.
Here, first things first, we're joined by Fox Sports NBA analyst Sarah Kustok. Sarah, good morning.
Hey, good morning, you guys. Thanks for having me.
It is great to have you here.
Nick always does the handshake, so now
okay.
I'm with you.
Yeah, there we go.
Handshakes are good.
I like high fives, but you know,
we're too far.
It's the cold season.
Yeah.
So dap it up. Hey, let's talk about LeBron James reclaiming his throne this season. Lakers in Chicago last night, where they beat the Bulls for their sixth straight win. For LeBron, 30 points, 10 rebounds, 11 assists. That is his third straight triple-double for a guy some said had started to decline last season. Mm. Some, not the guy to my right. First Lakers since Magic Johnson to accomplish that feat. How is this happening for LeBron in year 17? Sarah, is LeBron back to being the best player in the NBA?
I will say yes, but I think we look at a handful of players. Obviously, things changed at the end of last season. We forgot a little bit about LeBron James considering the fact that he was hurt. He didn't play in the postseason. I think that's why we saw the things that Kawhi was able to do. Kevin Durant before he got injured. Giannis Antetokounmpo being the MVP. However, when it comes to who's the best player in the NBA, I think about who would you want, whether it was a two-on-two game, whether it was a game seven of the time, who do you want on your team? And that is LeBron James. That remains to be LeBron James. And he's had a tremendous start to this season. I do think it's important to not just look at numbers. He's put up some insane numbers, and we look at the three straight triple-doubles, but Giannis is putting up some really impressive numbers. Kawhi Leonard, really impressive numbers. The caveat with LeBron, we always pointed to his defense as of late, and he has been very good on the defensive end, but I think flatly, when you're talking about who is the best player in the NBA right now, I still believe you could have a discussion. I still believe that it's very early in the season. So how are we going to continue to watch this, to monitor this? But right now, if there was one guy who I'd want on my side, it would be LeBron James.
No, absolutely. LeBron James is reminding everybody that he is the most dominant force in the NBA. He had that tweet this offseason and saying a lot of people were playing with the throne last year. He's going to remind folks this year, and he's come back this season with a vengeance. Three-game road trip, three straight triple-doubles. But LeBron James is banging the drum for this team's identity to be on the defensive end. Nick, you mentioned yesterday their coach, Frank Vogel, that's been his calling card throughout his entire career. So I like
his defense.
Defense. Yeah. And if this team is going to be as good as they have been, not last night, but as good as they've shown in the most of the games that they've played this season, if they're going to continue to be as good as they have been defensively, then I like where this Lakers team is going to end up at the end of the season on into the postseason. But as far as LeBron James is concerned, I don't think there's any question marks about the level of play that he can get to. I know what we're getting from Anthony Davis. The biggest question is, what are you going to get from the supporting cast from the Lakers? And last night, those guys showed up, particularly in the second half, late in that third quarter, on into the fourth quarter. They had a 13-point deficit going into the fourth. They went on a 14-0 run. Kyle Kuzma had 7 points during that run. 11 of his 15 points came in that fourth quarter. If that Lakers team is going to accomplish their ultimate goal of winning a title, they're going to have that third option on the offensive side of the court. And I think that AD and LeBron both know that has to be Kuz.
And real quick on that, with LeBron James, what makes him heads above all else, he knows how to get those guys going. He knows how to set the tone what he needs out of Anthony Davis. He knows how to set the tone. Okay, I need to get Kyle Kuzma going, so I'm going to find him for an easy cut up the gut and get him to have an easy basket so he can get his offense going. Quinn Cook, you name it, whether it's making the right pass, we saw that with the Danny Green three. You can go on and on again about plays, but he knows moments in the game. That's what separates the truly great players, of knowing how to get their teammates going at different moments in the game. Who needs what when? And LeBron James always does.
Up to and including when the game was essentially already decided, he started feeding Anthony Davis, who had had a brutal game. I think there was part of it was probably he's back home, had been doing a lot of like media responsibilities, maybe hanging out with some friends,
maybe.
Who knows?
Chicago's a fun
right, but and Anthony Davis was on a wrist breaking his double digit scoring streak. Like he went into the fourth quarter in single figures in points. And once the game's already decided, LeBron runs a play where Anthony's just standing in the corner waiting. Mm-hmm. And he's going to get a wide open corner three. And then they run another play where Anthony's going to get a layup, even though they didn't even need those buckets. But for Anthony, you're at home, finish on a high note, feel better about what had been his worst game of the year. I mean, you both nailed it. And the point you made, what I would call is total control of the game. Harden, I'm a big James Harden fan. And Harden's offensive numbers over this now half decade, you can put up against, honestly, any player since Wilt. Like Kobe's best half decade, LeBron's best half decade, Jordan's best half decade. Harden these last 5 years, you can put up against it. But when you watch it, he is not in full control of everything on the court the way LeBron is. Like, even though Harden's a great passer and creating a bunch of points, I talked with Isaiah Thomas, the original Isaiah Thomas, and he maybe, off the record or off the air, I shouldn't say it's off the record, he maybe took a little issue with my all-time player rankings because he thought I might have snubbed a 6-foot-tall Detroit Piston point guard. And the point he made was, so much of what the greatest players do doesn't have to show up in the box score. It's understanding how to put my team in the best position to win based on what my teammates need. And that is why the discussion about who's going to play point guard for the Lakers, to me, that is an interesting discussion, but it's only relevant through three quarters. Because in the fourth quarter, the ball's going to be in LeBron's hands, because last night he only had 2 points in the fourth quarter. He had 28 through three, but he was hitting guys for open shots. He was controlling the game. And that is the one thing right now, to me, other than shooting, LeBron has on Giannis. Because Giannis is a Defensive Player of the Year caliber defender. Giannis might average 15 rebounds a game. Giannis can average as many points as he wants, and he's a better passer than he gets credit for. Giannis is only 24. He has not yet evolved to full control of the game. Kawhi this year, with the playmaking, is evolving to that. He just don't like to play that much. So until Kawhi wants to play night in, night out, he's going to forfeit the ability to have that title. But that is what LeBron in year 17 with the gray beard can do better than anybody in maybe NBA history.
Why do you think LeBron is so keen on showing people that he never went away? Why is it so important for him with the tweets, come out hard with the triple doubles? I want to show people I'm more than just a point scorer with leading league in assists. Like, why has that been such an important thing? Why does
he want to make it inside LeBron's head? But if you believe you are the greatest player to have ever played the game, which I believe LeBron James does, then you want to show that. And I think for him, I mean, we never know. You can nitpick what makes someone tick. What makes this player tick? Why are they? What motivates them? And I think a part of what motivates him is people understanding his greatness. And I like that. I like the playfulness. I love the tweet afterwards. I like the fact that he is pretty open about listening and hearing what people have to say and having something to prove.
I don't have an issue with him hearing what everybody has to say, but I don't know about LeBron James taking on this villain persona, because in the past it hasn't necessarily worked out for him. I think LeBron is a better hero than he is a villain. He's already got enough enough pressure on him right now with what he's trying to do this year, because he made the move to L.A. It was going to be championship or bust. Those are the expectations. But there have always been high expectations ever since LeBron James came into the league, and people have doubted him at every single turn in his career. So that's why I think he's so adamant about proving to everybody that he's still the best player in the league. It's because everybody wants to find a reason, no matter what it is, to doubt him. Now, at this stage in his career, it's about him being in year 17. Can he keep up this level of play?
And just quickly, you mentioned move to L.A. He still hadn't won over the Laker fans prior to this year. Laker fans didn't want to like him. They, you know what I mean? They had spent a long time saying Kobe.
I'm a Lakers fan.
And now he knows he can't fully win them over until the postseason. Didn't even get to play in the postseason last year. But there is an element of getting. It was a very tepid applause, if you remember, when LeBron passed Michael Jordan on the scoring list last year.
Yeah, we made
Laker
a point
fans
of that.
Hadn't bought into him prior. They're buying into him now. I think that's part of it as well.
First things first, we're now joined by former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott. Thanks for hanging with us, Bart.
What up? Three days in a row, man. This is almost like a relationship.
I didn't really like that left-handed fist bump you gave
me. My bad.
Yeah, when people give you the left.
You know they ain't
right. You know they ain't
right. But you're lefty.
It doesn't matter.
Well, right hand is a sign of respect.
Yeah, exactly. Left hand.
Oh, I didn't know that. Is that a guy thing?
That's an urban hood thing.
I would say human.
It's a human thing? Okay. Well, that's probably why I missed it.
Guy cold.
Bart, let's talk about the latest setback for one Cam Newton. So what do you think, Bart? Is the Cam Newton era over in Carolina?
This is a tough one for me, because when you look at Cam Newton, he's only 30 years old, but it's not Father Time. I just think it's the accumulation of injuries. You know, he reminds me, we were talking about yesterday about, you know, the late, great Steve McNair. Mm-hmm. And he kind of reminds me about the style of play, the way that he ran over people, the way that they used him as a lead runner. You know, you look at some of the hits that he's taking when he's trying to go in against Atlanta, and he gets almost knocked unconscious and keeps ticking. But the thing is, eventually you break down.
Yep.
And it just seems like his body's breaking down. When your body starts breaking down, your body tries to compensate, and it happens, and it just continues to happen. Last year was the shoulder. This year it's the foot. And I always get afraid when I think about a mobile quarterback with Liz Frank. You know, can he be a pocket quarterback? Last year you got him off to a great start, 6-2.
Yep.
You got him off to 6-2, and then they lost 8 in a row after the shoulder.
And his numbers were better than the MVP year, up through 8 games.
Right. But see, the best ability in the league is availability. And everybody's replaceable. And really what the Panthers are going to have to decide is Kyle Allen a true franchise quarterback.
Yes.
Because if he is, then you go all in and you become, you know, you have a higher gun, because now you have a cheap quarterback and you can go out and you can get, you know, extra special, you know, weapons on the outside. Cam Newton, he's only going to make $21 million. That's a bargain. He's right above Andy Dalton. So when you think about how much you have invested inside of your quarterback position, that's really not a lot of money. He ranks like 19th overall.
Yeah, see, for me, it's not whether or not Kyle Allen is a franchise quarterback. That part of it is not the biggest concern. The question is whether or not the Carolina Panthers are willing to extend Cam Newton beyond 2020, and knowing what a quarterback extension is going to cost with a guy like Cam Newton's resume, a former MVP, led the team to a Super Bowl back in 2015. I mean, you're probably talking about starting at $30 million on average annual value.
Right.
Is David Tepper and Marty Herney, are they willing to make that kind of commitment to Cam Newton, a quarterback that has dealt with shoulder injuries, not just this offseason, but the prior offseason, who's currently dealing with a this Frank injury that they thought that they could treat conservatively, let it heal up. It hasn't gotten better. He had to see Dr. Anderson. We don't know how they're going to approach it in terms of trying to get him right, whether they're going to give it more time, whether they're going to have to deal with a surgery in the offseason. But for a quarterback with Cam Newton's style of play, with the physical ailments that he's dealing with, I mean, Bart hit the nail on the head. Quarterbacks, players in general, don't become healthier as they get older. It's a lot of wear and tear on Cam Newton, and there are serious questions as to whether or not we've already seen the best of him.
Let me ask you a question. I just want to follow up, because why can't the Panthers do what seems like is option C, which is not extend him and not move on from him, and just say, Cam, you're in the last year of your deal. you're going to play the last year of your deal out, and we're going to see if you can be healthy, because we all agree $21 million is a bargain for a quarterback in this league. If they cut Cam and go with Kyle Allen, just to get a veteran backup is going to cost you $6 or $7 million probably. So why is that to you? It's seemingly not a viable path.
Well, here, it's not a viable path, but just because we don't see quarterbacks, especially franchise quarterbacks, go into a year with no guaranteed money in future years. Sure. It just doesn't happen. Now, this could be the extenuating circumstance where the Carolina Panthers and Cam Newton both acknowledge the situation, but I don't know that to be the case. I don't know that one won't force the other's hand this offseason.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah. Why not let Kyle Allen start, ride Christian McCaffrey, make this a really great defensive team with a great running game, and then you can do what you do, save all this money in that cap space, that $19 million, go out and build whatever you need to build, a strong line, whatever it is that can make Kyle Allen just sort of manage the game because you have so many other pieces in place.
Yeah, because the reason you don't do that, because just managing the game won't get you a Super Bowl.
Exactly.
You know, you're trying to win. Ultimately,
Ravens a Super Bowl with Flacco.
No, Flacco
wasn't the game manager.
Yeah, he was a good Flacco that year. He went into a zone. He was a different type of player that year. You know, so what they're going to have to realize is, what's Cam's value? What can we get for him if we trade him in the open market? Can he still bring back a number one? I think if you call up the team in Illinois and you call the Chicago Bears up, they might say, we'll take and absorb $21 million because we feel like we're a team right on the cuff. If Kyle Allen, he's really auditioning for the rest of the year. If he's able to get this team into the playoffs, able to play well in the playoffs, I can't see how you take the job from him, not having certainty that Cam Newton could be healthy. And you have to commit to him for 3-4 years plus an extension, which it can be prorated, but it's still going to be a hefty number.
If you move on from Cam Newton, mark it down. The Carolina Panthers are going to be in the market for a quarterback for the first time since they acquired Cam Newton a decade ago. There's not a long list of successful quarterbacks with Kyle Allen's resume. And Kyle Allen, by the way, the only thing impressive on his resume from this season is the win-loss record. The completion percentage, the yards per attempt, the quarterback rating, touchdown interception ratio are all in the 20s.
Well, what matters? Okay, what if he had great numbers and they were 1-5 over the last 6 games?
Yeah, then I would believe in him, because I don't believe in the quarterback wins nonsense. I just don't. I know a lot of people do. I know a lot of people say this is the definition of a great quarterback. You guys mentioned Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco once won a playoff game. I think it might have even been a road playoff game where he completed 3 passes.
Was I on that team?
You might have been on that team. Like, there's this quarterback win stuff. We've got to do a better job of acknowledging that. No great quarterback loses more than they win. We all understand that. Mm-hmm. But some bad quarterbacks win more than they lose. This is what got the Jacksonville Jaguars in trouble.
Yeah,
is the team was winning. The team, hell, made a conference championship game. They're like, well, Blake took us to the conference championship game. Instead of recognizing that not only was the defense driving that bus, but Blake was in the back pulling it the other direction, preventing them from getting further. And so I'm not saying Kyle Allen's Blake Bortles. What I am saying is that if the Panthers move on from Cam, They're not going to be in position to draft a quarterback in the top 10 this year.
No.
They will be drafting a quarterback in the first round the following year, because Kyle Allen ain't the answer. He's a nice stopgap for the time being, and he has proven something that a lot of people didn't think when he went undrafted and was cut twice his rookie season. He's a viable NFL backup quarterback. That's what he is.
Trevor Lawrence?
They're not going to be able to draft Trevor Lawrence.
It's hard to make the case what you've seen the last year or two that Cam Newton is the future for the team right now until you can see him getting better. So you see that the quandary that they're in right now, not knowing which direction to go.
Well, here's the other side of that, Jenna. You could come back with Cam Newton in 2020, but there's no guarantee that he goes out there a couple of games and he's going to be
healthy
for the entire season.
Right,
you could be on the hook for $21 million and Cam Newton play only 2 games like he did this season.
Yep.
That has to be a concern.
Talk some Kawhi Leonard now. The much anticipated matchup of Kawhi and Giannis, Clippers and Bucks tonight. We'll have to wait. Kawhi will not play in this one. His official diagnosis: load management. They are managing his load less than 2 weeks into the season. This is the second game he'll miss in the Clippers' first 8 games for this reason. Nick, your thoughts?
I mean, I don't mean to make you guys laugh. I'm beside myself on this. Kawhi Leonard has a responsibility, not just to the Los Angeles Clippers, to the league, to its fans, and dare I say, to its television partners. Now, Fox and FS1 is not one of the television partners, okay? This is not self-serving by me. In fact, the network it's on tonight, I hope nobody watches it ever in life. But I'm sure people were looking forward to seeing Giannis and Kawhi.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi Leonard is in year 9. He is 28 years old. We had a damn national emergency when LeBron James, in year 14, after 6 straight trips to the finals, took a couple games off due to load management because we said, no, people are there to see you play. And in that context, I understood it. The guy had played more basketball than anyone in the history of the league in that small of a sample. They were trying to, there were other elements involved. And by the way, for his team, seeding had proven never to matter for LeBron coming out of the East. None of that is the case right now with Kawhi and the Clippers. Seeding will matter. The first game he missed, they lost. Yeah, the Raptors missed 22 games of Kawhi last year. They were 17-5. That was a fully functional one seed before they got Kawhi Leonard, slotted him in for DeMar DeRozan, could win without him. Paul George is not there yet. And the national television part of this has to matter. The fact that ultimately, all sports are make-believe. Mm-hmm. It's just a different entertainment option. I understand for the players and the teams, the championships are very real. But ultimately, the only reason Kawhi Leonard is more wealthy and more famous and more a sought-after endorser than the world's greatest ultimate frisbee player is because people have put a value on watching basketball more than ultimate frisbee. There's no moral relevancy to it.
Mm-hmm.
And for Kawhi to just be skipping nationally televised games, two of them, and we're 3 days past Halloween, is ridiculous. And you can say, as long as the Clippers win the title, nobody... Yeah, as long as they win the title. As you can't now, though, all of a sudden, you're the 4 seed when you could have been the 2 seed and your second round matchup's harder than it needs to be and you get bounced. We're going to go back to these days. And I don't want to be the old man yelling in the cloud, Canty, but I'm old enough to remember when guys in year 9 at 28 years old, when they're not coming off an injury... Plan to play. The plan was, I'll play at least 75 games. Kawhi last year played 60. He was coming off an injury. Fine. He's not coming off an injury. He's now going to miss 2 of 8, and they're both on national TV. I hate it. I just hate it as a fan and as a consumer of the league.
So for the conversation's sake, let's assume everybody is healthy. Where would you put the Clippers in the Western Conference?
At top 3.
They would be in the top 3. So, you're probably looking at them as being a team that could challenge to be in the Western Conference Finals.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, the Clippers, 100%. They could make, I don't pick them to make the NBA Finals, but assuming health, it wouldn't be shocking if they did.
Okay, so that's what I'm looking at. With Kawhi Leonard's situation, I think that he understands that as long as he's healthy when his team gets to the postseason, as long as Paul George is healthy once they get to the postseason, there's a pretty good chance that they'll have a shot to be the team coming out of the Western Conference. Now, we saw last year when he was in the Eastern Conference, having the number 1 seed did not matter for that team. They were able to overcome that and still get to the NBA Finals. So Kawhi is looking at this from the standpoint of, I know people will judge me based on championships. You talked about LeBron James and the criticism that he got for load management and sitting out the second night of back-to-backs. We talked about that and we criticized him, but ultimately, what we really are critical about LeBron James with is the number of championships, because he's only got 3. If you're going to compare him to being Jordan, Jordan's got 6. Yep. LeBron James, even though he's gone to 8 straight, they hold his record in the finals against him. So Kawhi understands that when you're the caliber of player he is and when you're in a conversation for the greatest player on the planet, a big part of that is what your resume looks like in terms of winning titles. And I think that they prioritize that. And the biggest part about the regular season is it's a war of attrition. So making sure that I'm as healthy as I could possibly be once I get there, that has to be the priority.
Well, here's the thing, because you said something very important. When you're in the conversation for best player on the planet, a big part of that is winning titles. Yeah, 100%. I would argue the final part of it and the most important part of it is winning titles. But you get in that conversation by playing basketball, by showing up, by being available for your team. Kawhi Leonard last year played a career high minutes per game, 34. LeBron this year in year 17 is playing a career low, 35. Kawhi Leonard this year has played six games. Has played six of his team's seven games. He's playing 30 minutes a night. So they're already load managing you within the game. And so to you, he is, maybe he does not care. Maybe this is just nerds like me that care about the lists and the rankings. But he is removing himself from the discussion that maybe should be rightfully his. He's the defending finals MVP, a best player in the world, when you don't play.
Well, his argument is obviously all my DNPs last year, who cares? I was in the finals, we won the title, all of it. Would you have less of an issue if, I know the issue of how many games he takes off is a big one for you, but what if it wasn't against the Bucks team? What if he picked a different game that wasn't a nationally televised game?
Yeah, pick tomorrow. Pick the other side. It's like, oh, he's not going to play back-to-backs. Well, there's the back, and then there's two back. Pick the one that's not against the Bucks. And if Paul George were healthy yet, Canty, I would have less of an issue.
Okay.
If Paul George were there, and it's like, hey, we came here together, we know we're both going to load manage throughout the year, Paul George ain't there yet. And the Clippers, right now, they're 5-2. With a loss today, they go to 5-3. It's obviously too early, but all the losses matter. Do we think that the Clippers are going to finish with the best record in the West by seven games? These things are, no. And so I don't think the Clippers are built to go 17-5 without them the way the Raptors did either. And I think getting through the West without home court is harder. I don't like any of it. I just don't like any of it. 28 years old. Come on, man. Play.
Take a break. Play. We've been treated to some star-studded performances by Kyrie Irving, the Nets superstar, 222 points this year.
God.
That is second most in a player's first seven games with a new team in NBA history. Why? First most? Will Chamberlain. That's not bad company for Kyrie. Sarah, you're with this team every day. How impressive has Kyrie been this year?
It's been so much fun to watch, and I think it's a certain level of a player that you're accustomed to the numbers they put up. You see the highlights, you're watching the games in and out, but you don't truly appreciate the player that they are. When you look at the numbers, it's not just the points, too, because it's about he's averaging close to 8 assists per game. He's at about 6 rebounds per game.
The rebounds is impressive.
And he has been getting after it. And you say that on the glass, he's been really active. He's been much more active and engaged on defense. And the way in which he's done it throughout the flow of the offense. Mm-hmm. And so I think you look at these numbers and it's like, oh, he must just be putting up a ton of shots and have a sky high usage rate. It's not been that way. He's been highly efficient from the field. He can hit a three from anywhere. He can get to the basket, I think, more than anything. And we always see it, the highlight reel type handles that he brings to the table. But how he's able to manipulate a defense. It is not translated probably to the extent that they want in wins to this point, but I wouldn't put that on Kyrie. He's also had some timely baskets. So he's really been a tremendous asset to a team that's continuing to still look to build some chemistry.
Well, Kyrie wanted to go somewhere where he would feel the love, and Brooklyn was a team where the players and the organization were actively recruiting him during the season and the offseason. And so you look at this situation, this is everything that Kyrie Irving was looking for. You know, coming off of a year where he got a lot of criticism in Boston. People didn't understand why that team didn't live up to the expectations. That team pushing a LeBron James-led Cavs team the year before with no Kyrie, with no Gordon Hayward to game seven in the Eastern Conference Finals. People couldn't figure out why that Boston Celtics team couldn't take that next step and why it looked like they regressed. And Kyrie bore the brunt of that criticism. But now in Brooklyn, it hasn't been that at all. So I think a lot of it has to do with the expectations coming into this year, because even though Brooklyn had an awesome offseason where they got Kyrie and KD, everybody realized that KD is going to be dealing with the Achilles and that you probably weren't going to see him the upcoming NBA season. But that provided Kyrie with the opportunity to come into this year with relatively low expectations in comparison to the organization that he just left. So he can just go out there and play basketball. And to me, it looks like a more relaxed Kyrie Irving out there. And the one other difference that I would say in the situation this year with Kyrie as opposed to Boston, this is a more veteran team than the group that was up there in Boston. I think that the Nets are secure in their identity and what Kenny Atkinson and Sean Marks have been building for several years now. So I just feel like this is a better situation for Kyrie. A lot less noise. He can go out there and play basketball.
Too many guys in Boston, and I don't begrudge them this, were playing for their second contract. And that's the riskiest thing in the NBA. Terry Rozier had never been paid. Jaylen Brown had never been paid. Al Horford was a pending free agent, even though Al is the consummate pro. Tatum had never been paid. And so all those guys who had thrived when Kyrie was on the shelf, when he was hurt his first year in Boston at the end, it's the chemistry never fit. And Kyrie is a different cat. And I don't say that in a negative way. He just is. Listen, some people say I'm a different cat. Like, there's not the same way Kyrie is, but there are some things that go along with Kyrie that not everyone is going to thrive with and not everyone wants to sign up for. And I know some people can say, oh, the Nets, they were one of the fun up-and-coming teams. Now they're 3-4 this year. Two things are unfair about that. One is, first week of the season, they had the game in Kyrie's hand to win it twice and just missed. Like, now in the game in the middle of that, he actually had the game in his hand and made. But the first game of the year, he did a little slip and slide maneuver and missed the jump shot. Second game was when Ja Morant blocks him and they end up losing overtime. Mm-hmm. They could easily this year be 5-2 instead of 3-4. But the other thing for the Nets is they have a gaping hole at forward on their roster. Now, you know who's going to step into that hole mm-hmm. is Kevin Durant. Yeah. But this is, and I'm not trying to put you in a weird spot, but they built this team believing, well, when KD's here, not only are we not going to have a hole at forward, we might have the best player in the league, some would argue, in that spot. But in the meantime, they've got a bunch of competent NBA centers, maybe a surplus of competent guards, and they're figuring out the front court spots, which in a league where all the best guys are front court players, it feels like, that's a tough spot to be weak. But 31, 32, 6, and 8 is unimpeachable. And he's doing it on high efficiency. So I was a critic of Kyrie last year to a degree because I felt like it wasn't going to work in Boston, and that was proven out to be true. I think it's unfair to criticize him based on the Nets being a game under 500 through 2 weeks this season.
Okay, let me just be a little Debbie Downer here. With those 32 points come the rumors of mood swings, of sometimes he's got some personality issues, sometimes butt heads with management in some way. How does that factor in, and how concerning is that for the team?
And I respect these questions, or I respect the things that people talk about from what happened in Boston, what happened in Cleveland. I'm there every day. I'm there at practice. I sit through the open gyms. You're there at games. You talk to the teammates. You know the players, many of them who you've known for many years, and there's been no issues. And that's not to say we've all been through the course of an NBA season, the highs and lows. You're traveling with people, you're around people, things come up and things happen. But to this point, and I know that had stemmed from Jackie McMullen, I respect more than anyone on the planet. I don't think that was the purpose of her article. And sometimes we pull one thing out of there, and that's where the mood swings had come up from. I think anytime a guy comes to a new situation and he's still relatively young in his career, 27 year, a fresh slate, and it's a different group. And as Nick said, it's a different set of personalities on this Nets group, which have embraced Kyrie. Kyrie has embraced them. He has got a high level of compete. He is intense, and he brings a whole nother level of a mentality of trying to win a championship to a group. However, I think that's been something that's been a very positive for this team.
And I want to add one other thing. The Nets last year were a really, really successful indie film where they had no stars, where they had everyone that was just trying to prove themselves, all it is. They are now a set where Christian Bale or Russell Crowe or Scarlett Johansson walks onto it. And guess what? Those people get a little special treatment. Those people are a little different than the others. And maybe for some people it's jarring because, oh, we had all this great everything going. Yeah, but you had a defined ceiling. There's not a lot of Tim Duncans. There's not a lot of people, continue the analogy, not a lot of Keanu Reeves. Mm-hmm. A-list superstar with no ego whatsoever. It's like, just wants to be one of the guys. So I've been someone that's been critical of Kyrie Irving. You know this is the deal with the most famous people in the world, of which Kyrie is one. I don't think that has to do with the Nets being, up to this point in the season, slightly below expectations record-wise.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.